Do you have a drink? You might want to get a drink because I'm about to tell you the most messed up thing that you're going to hear today. As usual, it comes from the annals of history. I usually try to be as horrifying and gross and generally upsetting as possible in my stories, but I can never compete with the history books. Today's story is about a modern-day incarnation of a haruspex. What's a haruspex? I didn't know either until recently. A haruspex is a kind of priest, a prophecy man. They date back to around 2000 BC, before the Middle Ages, when science was to be distrusted. In this point in time, the practice of haruspicy was well known, perhaps not well received, but in some cultures, such as the Babylonian, it was respected. A haruspex divined omens and the portents of future events in the patterns they found in the spilled entrails of animals. I know that me talk pretty sometimes, so I want to dial this back because I want to make sure this lands with everyone. A haruspex would take an animal, usually a sheep, sometimes a bird, and they would slash open its living, squirming belly to watch how the guts hit the ground. By examining the viscera and the patterns made when it spilled, the haruspex could see things. I guess it's not that different from reading tea leaves. This all sounds grim and disgusting, and I'm not disputing that it is. It's repulsive. But you gotta take it in the context of the time and the place, and it was intended to be a positive thing to help people. And since for every positive there's a negative, that means there was a dark side to haruspicy. Bear in mind, at this time, in this place, no one had any real moral quandary about ripping guts out of animals. Maybe it didn't appeal to everyone, but this was because of the aspect of a waste of resources. Animal rights were not a thing, so people didn't have much of a problem with that. Living humans. When a haruspex had his druthers, it would be a sheep that he cut open. When an anthropomancer had his druthers, it would usually be... Jesus Christ. Living, virgin, male children. Although, the elderly and slaves and prisoners of war were also common sacrifices. Anthropomancy was used by dark warrior priests and evil men to foretell the wicked paths they should walk. Thankfully, the practices of haruspicy and anthropomancy are long extinct. No one has engaged in these barbaric rites in centuries. Until... And you knew there was an until coming, didn't you? 1998, when a man named Neil Wallace believed that he had been shown true enlightenment. He made a maypole from the viscera of his wife, his siblings, his parents, and his kids. And when he did so, he was shown a horrible and glorious new purpose for his life. Neil Wallace was to be the new haruspex for the world. He was to use the old ways to split humanity open and show us our own inevitable doom in the folds of our steaming entrails. Buckle up. We're about to get visceral. This story is called Guts. Drinking whiskey in the kitchen and telling scary stories around the fire. Music, monsters, and mayhem, killers, cannibals, and cults. Fearful fiction and furious fact, tall tales, and terrible truths. This is A Scary Home Companion. There was a man named Neil Wallace, and his brain had become infected with something evil. Devils. Ghastly ones. Two of them, to be precise, known in dream dictionaries as the Bickering Butchers. Now, Dr. Wallace was a respected man, an anthropologist, a man of the people, a celebrated author, lecturer, speaker, educator, philanthropist, a family man. And a risk-taker. He was an explorer who had once discovered a hidden valley in South America populated by a lost tribe that had never had any contact with the outside world. While he was there living with these people, Wallace had a brush with something that was perhaps supernatural. A dark occurrence that somehow tarnished his spirit. And this dark occurrence stuck to him. He carried it with him, always. For years it festered inside of him. Sometimes madness takes hold suddenly in one fell swoop. Most times it's like a virus digging down deep into your core and poisoning you from the inside out. And that's what happened with Dr. Wallace. The darkness inside of him grew slowly, ever so slowly, convincing him that a glorious new path was awaiting. When that darkness exploded, the good doctor butchered his whole family in the most gruesome way imaginable. As they died, laid out all around him with their entrails in heaps. He stood in the center and he watched them go. He had been told by the butchers in his dreams that he was chosen and his new role would be revealed in the entrails of the dying. And it came to be so. He saw that message. He got his new purpose in life. And then he burned his home and he disappeared. Dr. Neil Wallace had been an anthropologist. He studied people and he wrote about them. In this way, his new path was just like his last. But now, he was not a scientist, nor an anthropologist, nor an author. Now he was a haruspex for the new world, an oracle destined to divine the future in the spilled guts of the living. And he had a new hypothesis. He was writing a new book, forging a new way to show people the truth. He had been shown by these butchers that there were omens waiting to lead him to the end of his studies, a place called the End of Days, to his final destination. And when he got there, everything would be laid bare, and made clear. But if he truly wanted to understand, then he needed to find the right people and subject them to the right conditions. And only then would the truth be revealed and their spilled entrails. There was a place that he needed to go, but he didn't know how to get there. The answers were inside of you, and you, and you, and you, and you. You see, this isn't about Neil Wallace. The modern-day Harrispecs, he might be the impetus for this story, but it's really about the victim. It's about you. Imagine. I want you to close your eyes, and I want you to imagine that you're waking up, standing upright, and you're bound face to face with someone. A young man about your age. You've never seen him before. Like you, he's scared. Beyond scared. Petrified, breathing fast and shallow, sweating, trembling. Your belly is on fire. It's a cold fire, not like anything that you've ever felt before. You look down and see that it's because too small surgical incisions have been made into your abdomen. A little X, just to left of center. Inside, you feel cold, like there's a wind blowing through you. Surprisingly, there's very little blood. These incisions are precise, no bigger than they need to be, no deeper than they need to be. No major blood vessels touched. Because this isn't supposed to kill you. Not at all. It's much worse than that. A piece of your small intestine has been gently pulled out through that X in your belly. And it looks a lot more like uncooked sausage than you would have thought. Thick, plump, wet, smooth membranes, shockingly pink, and tied into knots. That young man that you're face to face with, they've also been cut with a little X. Their intestines have also gently been pulled out and then knotted together with yours. So you cannot tell where your guts end and his begin. The two of you are staring into each other's eyes. What could you possibly say? You've been forced into a situation that is not only grotesque, it's not only deadly, but it's also extremely intimate. So close. Face to face, nose to nose, eye to eye. Breath intermingled, sharing a heartbeat, conjoined to a moment, to the utter exclusion of the entire rest of the fucking world. the sort of intimacy that comes only through sex, but this is beyond even that. You are now closer with this person, this stranger, than you have ever been with any human being. You both share a common truth that now rules your lives, and that is, if either of you move or pull away even slightly, it will unfurl the guts from your bellies. The only thing that you can do is stand perfectly still and pray. Young man is talking to you, whispering, "Hey, stay with me. We have to stay together." You don't answer, of course. Of course you have to stay together. What choice do you have? You're looking around you, trying to assess your locale. You and this other young man have both been stripped down to your boxer shorts and socks. The floor beneath you is damp, blank concrete. Darkness all around. You see only brick walls in the gloom. Not enough to get a fix on where you might be. What happened? How did you get here? The two of you are standing alone, as far as you can tell. There's one bare light bulb right above you, low wattage, just bright enough to let you see how fucked you are. "Don't panic," the guy says to you. "Do not panic. You cannot panic." "How?" you ask him. "How do I not panic?" Guy stays light and easy breezy. He says, "We're not bleeding. We're not dying. Not yet. We have hours at least. But if you freak out or we pull away from each other, we both die right now. Do we agree on that?" And you nod. The guy looks around the room just like you did. "Do you know where we are?" And you shake your head no. "Do you remember how we got here?" You shake your head no. "Do we know each other?" "I don't know," you say. "How the fuck are you so calm?" "Well," the guy says, "I took a shitload of acid last night. A lot of fucking acid, dude. So, I'm not 100% sure any of this shit is real. I could be watching a movie, right?" You shake your head. "You are not watching a fucking movie." "Calm is good," he says. "Don't talk me out of this." And then he looks down. He studies your knotted entrails, but not with fear. From a more analytical perspective. Gently, he reaches out and runs the tip of his finger along his own exposed intestine. And as scared as you are, as cold as you feel inside, there's a sense of comfort from this guy somehow. He's so calm, so placid. It's bleeding through into you. Holy shit, is that the acid? How does LSD work? You don't know how LSD works. Can you get dosed like this? Do people on acid get paranoid? Is this a part of it? The guy sees you starting to freak, and he calms you down again. And then, miraculously, he throws you a lifeline. He says the one thing that will grab your attention and make you block out everything else. Something too good to be true. So good, it has to be a dream. This guy looks you in the eye and says, I can get us out of this. And you fucking believe him.
When it comes to the mythology of the nightmare people called the Ghastly Ones, my guest today is one of the world's foremost experts, Dr. Andre Angento. Thank you for joining me once again.
Always a pleasure, Marianne.
What can you tell me about the Butchers, sometimes called the Bickering Butchers?
That is the name we've given to an image that has reoccurred in different cultures throughout the last few centuries, but perhaps longer. The Butchers are two people standing face to face. They both have been cut open and their intestines tied together into knots. They are always screaming and yelling and attacking one another.
I have read the Butchers are supposed to represent a husband and wife. Is that correct?
This is standard, but not as much as you would expect. A substantial percentage of the cases refer to them as brother and sister, although they usually come from areas where siblings and spouses are not mutually exclusive.
And what do you mean by that?
Small enclaves, remote places, or inbreeding as a way of life.
Does that seem unusual to you?
Not at all. These figures represent the bond between family and responsibility, you see. You are bound to someone, be it a husband, a wife, a brother, a sister, a child, a parent, and you come to loathe this person because of these unbreakable family ties. The Bickering Butchers represent this feeling, taken to a psychotic degree. You hate what you are. You murder what binds you to your life.
I've done some reading on anthropomancy. Could this myth stem from that practice?
Yes. It is possible the image of the Butchers was inspired by the practice of anthropomancy, but I don't think so. I think, if anything, that the horrific practice was inspired by dreams of the Butchers.
Really?
There's a story about a Babylonian priest. He was the first Heruspex. He was very well regarded by his peers. He started a trend. Years later, he was retired and dying when a young priest asked him how God inspired him. The priest said, "It was not God that showed me the way. It was a man and woman. They were so full of anger, and I realized the truth could only be found between them." We believe that we find the truth in ourselves. The Heruspex believes the same thing. He believes we can only see that by cutting people open and pulling it out.
Do you believe that?
Of course not. I may be eccentric, but I am not one of them.
One of who?
The followers of the Ghastly Ones. They are emissaries.
So you and this guy, this white guy, looks about your age, skinny, bad complexion. You're pushed belly to belly, trying to keep from putting any tension on the knots binding your intestines together. Every little tug feels like it digs the knots in tighter on themselves. "Okay," the guy says. "You don't want to hear this, and I don't want to say this, but I need some slack to work. So you inch back, and I mean just a single goddamn inch, and you're holding your breath the whole time. Okay, the guy says. You really don't want to hear this, and I really don't want to say it. But I mean, I need some slack to work with. He explains, much to your growing horror, that he's going to need a couple of feet of extra cordage to use if he wants to unfurl all of these tangles. It's an insane idea, and it will probably kill you. Of this you are convinced. But, the guy reminds you, unless you want to spend the rest of your short life like this with me, we have to do something. You close your eyes and you raise your palms. The guy puts his palms flat against yours, and you put just a little pressure against each other at first. You're envisioning the face of your father at this point because it always soothes you. But not this time. This time, he gives you a sour look, and you know exactly why. Because you can't tune out at a moment like this. Life and death, flesh and blood, you need to stand tall. Anything less is cowardice. So you open your eyes, and you press against the guy's palms, pushing each other apart, and looking down, you see your own guts unspooling from that X in your belly. 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. Holy fuck, every inch feels like a mile. And the cold is creeping into your heart and lungs. You want to shiver, but you know that you can't. You can't tremble. You can't move at all. Because the guy is starting to work on those knots. You ask him, are you really high right now? Oh, yeah, he says. This is a good goddamn thing, too. This is fucking crazy, isn't it? Yes, you say. Yes, it is. It occurs to you now, and only now, that the two of you have different skin colors. Because your blood and your guts are the same shade of red. Your viscera, indecipherable from one another. Maybe it's not as cute and fuzzy as the symbol of the white and black hands shaking. Maybe. But it goes a lot deeper than that. You watch this kid work. You could tell he's scared as hell. He keeps pausing to ball up his hands into tight fists and to pop his knuckles. But he's working your guts so softly, so gently, so carefully. Can't squeeze it too much, can't pull too hard. Can't tear open those delicate membranes. Can't pull out more slack. It's delicate. It's almost artistic. And you think, how the fuck does this kid know so much about organs? And then the last of the knots is sliding open. It's falling away. And that tangle of entrails that conjoins the both of you separates. The guy says, "Do not jam those back inside of yourself." "I was not going to do that," you say. "So what happens now?" "Fucked if I know," the guy says. He's holding his guts in one hand, but he extends the other. It's red and slick with a mixture of your own still warm blood and his. He says, "I'm Terry." You shake his hand and you pull him into the closest embrace yet. "I'm Graydon. Thank you." Only then do you both allow yourselves to cry. And somehow you end up laughing, and it hurts, but that only makes you laugh harder. Graydon and Terry made it out of that room. They expected to find someone, anyone, waiting for them, but they didn't. The man who had done this to them, the Haruspex, was long gone. He didn't need to stay. He'd known they would escape. He had known there was nothing their guts could teach him. He had done this for them, for their benefit, for their enlightenment. He had done it because he had already read the story of the end of the world in the guts of the dead, and he knew the roles that these two boys would play one day. Dr. Neil Wallace continued on his journey into the night towards his next sacrifice and his next unholy message from the bickering butchers. Thank you for listening to another episode of Scary Home Companion. Guts marks the end of Season 5, which was a huge season of growth for this show. Part of the reason for that growth is our new Patreon page. Eric Taylor, Carol Dawkins, Kevin Sario, Catherine Hensley, and others have already become patrons of the show. You get early access to new episodes, bonus materials, videos, supplemental documents that give you deeper details about specific episodes. Check out Patreon.com/ascaryhomecompanion. I would surely appreciate your support. Find me on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, or email me directly at ascaryhomecompanion@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show through iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, CastBox, Podchaser, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or right here at Buzzsprout. If you'd like to know more about how Dr. Neil Wallace became the Haruspex, listen to the episode called All Around the Maypole. If you're a regular listener to the show, you might have recognized the names that I dropped at the end. Years later, both of these young men would still have their fates entwined. Listen to Cemetery Smith and Graveyard Jones for more pieces to this particular puzzle. The episode was edited and produced by Jeff Davidson, featured guest appearances from Dan Jopling and Jamie Lee Hensley. Music provided by John 3:16 with The Divine Healer, Diogenes in Hell with Where the Mouth Should Have Been, Kamaku with Where You Hear the Prayer, The Willful Boys, Rough as Guts, and Chelsea Oxendine, as always, with the theme music. Run! Run! Run!